thread, and the further she drove away from me, the more the thread unravelled, like a cheap sweater, first the sleeve, then the shoulder, then the front and back, until I was standing naked at the window. My Aunt Kate told me what happened. Not the whole story, of course. Nobody tells a 7-year-old that his mother died with a penis in her mouth. Those details tend to be glossed over, like plot holes in a shitty movie, or questions about how Santa Claus squeezes down all those chimneys in a single night. Everybody at my school knew before I did. About my mother, not Santa Claus. Some of the older boys couldn't wait to tell me, while the girls giggled behind their hands. My father said nothing, not that first day, or the next, or any of the subsequent ones. Instead, he sat in his armchair, mouthing words as though conducting some unfinished argument. One day I asked him if Mum was in heaven.
No.
Where is she?
Rotting in hell.
But hell is for bad people.
It's what she deserves.
I had always assumed that Mr. Shearer also went to hell, but discovered later that he survived the crash. I don't know if they reattached his penis. I don't expect they cremated it with my mother. Maybe they had to make him a prosthetic one, a bionic penis. But that sounds like something from a cheap porno. Details like this have stayed with me, while most of my other childhood memories disappeared into the long grass. My mother's final day in particular is fixed in my mind, flickering against my closed eyelids, light and dark, playing on a continuous loop, like an old home movie. I have protected and preserved these scenes because so little remained of my mother after my father had finished expunging her from his life and mine. I cling to them still, these fragments of my childhood, some real, others imagined, polished like gems, and as tangible and definite to me as the world I walk through now, as solid as the trees and as cool as the sea breeze. I stand on the brow of a hill and look at the spired town, shimmering beneath shades of darkening blue. Thin wisps of cloud are like chalk marks on the cold upper air. Beyond the rooftops, past the headlands and rocky beaches and sandstone cliffs, I can make out the distant shore, where fallen boulders resemble sculptures, carved and smoothed by the weather. I am not a fast walker. I take my time, stopping and pointing out things. Sheep, cows, birds, horses. I make the sounds. Sheep are such passive, apathetic creatures, don't you think? There is no intelligence in their eyes, not like dogs or horses. Sheep are just blobs of wool, blindly obedient, ignorant, as gullible as lemmings. The footpath reaches a blind bend, hidden by the trees. This is a good place to wait. I sit with my back braced against a trunk and take an apple from my pocket along with a blade. "Would you like a piece?" I ask. "No, suit yourself. You keep walking." I don't mind waiting. Patience is not an absence of action. It is about timing. We wait to be born. We wait to grow up. And we wait to grow old. Some days, most days, I go home disappointed, but not unhappy. There will always be other opportunities. I have the patience of a fisherman. I have the patience of Job. I know all about the saints, how Satan destroyed Job's family and his livestock and turned him from a rich man to a childless pauper overnight, yet Job refused to condemn God for his suffering. The breeze moves through the branches of the trees, and I can smell the salt and the seaweed drying on the shingle. A sharper gust of wind blows leaves against my legs, and somewhere above me a dove coos monotonously. Then a dog barks, setting off a conversation with others, back and forth, bantering or grandstanding. I get up and put on my mask. I slip my hand into my trousers and cup my scrotum. My